How you doing?
Good.
How you doing?
You still got your DJ business?
Still doing it.
Good.
You're in the midst of history here. After 20 years of doing high school gigs, I think I'm in.
Good for you.
Put that aside, just focus on writing.
Bigwood. That's regular, that's not the agenda anyway.
Okay, meeting agenda is 12 noon. Welcome everybody. Call the meeting to order. Please stand for the pledge of allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call please.
Conklin.
Here.
Crunch.
Here.
Needhammer.
Here.
Page.
Here.
Salomon.
Here.
Quorum present.
Thank you. Moving on to the consent agenda. The purpose of the consent agenda is to expedite business by grouping non-controversial items together to be dealt with by one commission motion without discussion. Any member of the commission, staff, or the public may ask that any items on the consent agenda be removed and placed as the last item under new business to receive full discussion. Such requests will be automatically respected. We have before us item A, approval of the June 11th City Commission special meeting minutes as presented. We have approval of the June 11th City Commission regular meeting minutes as presented. We have approval to purchase a ThinkCenter M710's workstation from Marco Technologies LLC in the amount of $925 plus installation and delivery fees of approximately $150 and authorize the city manager to execute documents. That's basically a new computer for our treasurer, Cindy. Item D, approval to appoint Scott McDonald to the Planning Commission to fill a vacancy with a term to expire on May 31st, 2022. Item E, approval to appoint Larry Shute to the Planning Commission to fill a vacancy with a term to expire on May 31st, 2020. Approval to reappoint Aaron Place to the Planning Commission for a three-year term to expire on May 31st, 2022. And approval to reappoint Joe St. Genis to the Planning Commission for a three-year term to expire on May 31st, 2022. Before we take a vote, we do have Larry and Skyler here in the audience, so I think it would be appropriate to introduce them. And commissioners, you could ask any questions if you'd like, or if not, then we can go ahead with the approval or not approval of the consent agenda. Skyler? This is Scott McNaughton. He's been pretty active recently, and we appreciate you getting involved. You want to tell us a little bit about yourself?
Just born and raised Boyne City local. Trying to establish my feet on the ground with my family here and join the rest of you out there and try to keep Boyne City Boyne City. I mean, and try to keep everybody on the same page too. But,
thank you. Any questions for Skyler? And we have Larry Shutes with us.
Okay. Hello, Larry Shute on High Street. 15-year part-time resident. Bought a house 16 years ago. Now I'm full-time resident for over a year, so I feel like I've got a unique perspective to see not only Boyne City from a tourist perspective, as well as, you know, a regular and then now a full-time resident. It's been interesting watching all the changes that have happened in those, you know, 16 years. And so I also served on the City of Plymouth Planning Commission downstate, a city with a very much similar to Boyne City in the fact that it's got a central downtown and older community and is faced with growing problems constantly, as well as other issues that go on. So it's just wanted to lend the expertise and input to the city. To my Skyler says it'd be great. So, thank you.
Thank you. were recommendations from the planning commission. So, all right, with those introductions, the consent agenda, looking for a motion.
Move to approve the consent agenda.
Second.
Clerk's choice, I guess.
And we have a second. Any further discussion? Roll call, please.
Conklin?
Aye.
Grunge?
Aye.
Needhammer?
Aye.
Page?
Aye.
Salmon?
Aye.
Motion carried.
Thank you. Moving on to hearing citizens' comments on any non-agenda item. Okay, thank you. Correspondence, you want to cover that one, Mike?
Yes, we received a correspondence that's in your agenda packet from the manager of the, I think, owner of the Spring Harbor Apartments with regards to his desire to see multifamily residences included in the twice a year spring and fall residential collection program. That has never been an option since we established the program that was discussed at the time. Basically, only places that had did not have commercial pickups were included. So you have that request before you. It would require a significant budget amendment and revision of the existing program as it currently sits. So,
just a quick question. So, commercial pickup.
Whether it's a business or whether an apartment complex or a condo association, things of that nature.
Okay. Very good.
Mike, has it been reviewed since the program got started? I mean, the ground rules, just now that it's, what, 10 years in?
More than that, I would assume. But no, it hasn't. I would think if we were going to revisit that, the time the commission had some desire to do that, we would say, okay, let's do some research on it and bring it back for the next budget cycle.
Yeah, that's what I would suggest too.
I wonder if at that time we could also bring this issue up, and if we couldn't provide it, could we allow multifamily residential to participate on a fee basis for the complex owner, something like that, that would give an option for commercial properties at cost.
I mean, the scenarios you could come up with are sure. Unlimited.
Yeah.
Hugh, you said you wanted further.
Well, I mean, if this is an opportunity just to review it, if, you know, a legitimate concern was raised, then, and like Mike said, I think appropriate time is at the budget cycle. Maybe nothing has changed.
I guess I'm asking, do we have a consensus that we'd make a recommendation for staff to investigate and come back to us at budget time? All right.
We'll go for that.
So.
Okay.
Thank you. And Mike, city manager's report.
Okay, you have a copy of it in front of you, and I will be emailing it to you shortly. Just to let you know, and I'm sure you've noticed it driving around town, that all this spring's major road construction projects were pretty much done on schedule, with the last one, North Lake Street, mainly finished up last week, and kudos to everybody involved. They seem to go fairly smoothly. Even with Mother Nature giving us some challenges at times. Just to let you know that the work on the Boyne Mountain Force Main along M75 South is about 10% complete, according to the inspector on site. The contractor hasn't been there for the last couple days. They went out on another project. They're scheduled to return tomorrow. The Cedar and Terrace Road and Utility Reconstruction Projects are scheduled to begin work in July on the 22nd. And they will continue until about October 11th. And we're anticipating holding a public information meeting on those projects for the citizens and the residents that are abutting them in early July. We were advised last week that by the MEDC that the grant that has been approved for the pavilion project moved on to its next step. It's completed its basically application review and putting all the materials together for that, and it moved on to their legal department for their final reviews of all the documents. They're anticipating that process should take about 6 weeks. Last night's rains, one of many, brought down about another 2 inches of rain and water throughout the city, causing some short-term flooding around town as storm drains and ditches work to catch up. The high lake and river levels are slowing down the flows of storm drains that are connected to them and cause low-lying areas like Veterans Park right outside here to dry out more slowly after the rains. So you may be seeing some of those results. On a related matter, according to the National Weather Service in Chicago, May was the wettest month that they had in recorded history. They also report that during May, Lake Michigan rose 6 inches in that month, coming to within 1 foot of its all-time record height that was hit in 1987. That 6-inch increase in Lake Michigan equates to roughly 2.335 trillion gallons of water, according to them. And as Lake Michigan goes up and down, so goes Lake Charlevoix and the White River. And we're keeping a close eye as we're getting to the very top of our break walls and watching the waves splash over them. And it's hard to believe that from a couple of years ago where we were in the lows around 2015. The submerged fixed pier that is at our marina has been raised to its maximum height. And it's now has its deck out of the water. So if you've noticed that, it's not that the lake level went down, it's that the dock went up. And we're getting rumblings that the old Van Damme office building on Division Street is being prepared to move to its new location at 113 Trent Street. So if you have any questions on these or other items, I'd be glad to try to address them.
Thank you, Mike. Questions? Okay. Okay, moving on to reports of officers, boards, and standing committees. We have in our packet the May financial statement. Any questions for Cindy? Okay. Moving on to old business. We have a river jumping ordinance. And this will be a second hearing. I don't see any police officers here.
Yes, so I get to handle that one once we get to that spot on the agenda and bring that up. Okay, the commission will recall that this discussion began last year with some conversations with the police department. It was kind of, not much was acted on it, then it was brought back up with the city commission, and the commission decided to have us look at a potential ordinance. The ordinance was introduced recently, came to the city commission. Some comments were made with regards to possible language changes regarding it, and you have it coming back before you for a second reading today. Basically, you'll see that the language has been changed to basically make it more relevant with regards to Moyne City properties and structures. Going into bodies of water from any man-made structure or into the Boyne River from an object higher than the riverbank. So that would include both trees or like the river walk, things of that nature that are on our property. So these modifications have been put together by the police department, who presented to the commission for your consideration. You have the option of either adopting it as it is, making some minor modifications and adopting it, tabling it for further consideration at a future meeting, and/or denying it. So those are the options before you, and I'd be glad to try and address any questions for you. The reason that you don't have representatives from the police department here, there's the chief's conference that is going on at Boyne Highlands, and Jeff, Kevin, and Dan are up there attending that. Since it's being close by, we want to take advantage of those types of conferences. So that's not why they're with us. That's why they're not with us here today. But again, this is here for our second reading.
And so the process, explain the timeline. If it goes through the second hearing, it goes to 15 days.
If the city commission has the second hearing today and votes to approve it either as it is or with some minor modifications to it, it then has, I think, Cindy was correct me, I think you're right, 15 days after publication.
That's correct.
Okay.
Mike?
You're welcome.
Any comments from the public and or staff? We'll get on to board deliberation. Ron?
I'm good with it.
Okay. Dean?
I need to go here, but I'm still not satisfied with this because I think it's a little bit, and what I think about is, will a future police chief, police officer, city manager be able to easily interpret what this says? And it says man-made structures. Well, what's a man-made structure? I mean, at some level, the entire workforce in that area is man-made, it's generalized. And I think that leaves it open to interpretation. Somebody wouldn't know whether they're violating it, perhaps, or not. And the second thing also is riverbank. I know you supplied some definitions from dictionary.com what a riverbank is, but is a riverbank the edge of the river, or is a riverbank higher up on the river? Where's the riverbank? And I think what I was sort of trying to get at last time was, why don't we just be descriptive and say, this is what you can't jump from, in a way that people would understand, both those who are trying to comply with it and those who are trying to enforce it. So something as simple as jumping or diving into Lake Charlevoix, the Boyne River is prohibited from number one bridges, number two docks, walkways, trees, and fences on property owned by the city or the city. That's it. And then the enforcement, the second two would be enforcement things. And I think that that might avoid it, a possibility of misinterpretation in the future. This is what we want. This is where the problem is. This is what we're trying to solve, rather than having some of the description that leaves too much opportunity for interpretation or confusion about what's what you can jump off of, what you can't. So anyhow, that's my perspective on this.
Dean, would your suggestion include if somebody climbed up a tree off of one of our properties?
I think I said, well, what I said is, this would be, the idea was to be descriptive, say what you can't jump off of. So I said in this, maybe other things could be added, the docks, walkways, trees, and fences on property owned by the city of Boise.
Okay, that would include.
Instead of any structures, it's the same, because I think these are the ones that were the concern, right? Can't jump off a docks now, but this clarifies that, right? And the walkways that would include the boardwalk, and trees that overhang, you're talking about city property, and then fences, which I think is was fence along the boardwalk that we were climbing on and jumping off of, and that to me would be the situations that we're trying to address.
When you say docks, you're including the fishing dock and the shopping dock.
Is that how it is now? I think that's what the intent was, isn't it?
Yes.
Yes?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Sally?
I would go along with what Dean is saying. That would be a way to not, and if you're confused about what is and what isn't, there's going to ways to argue about something.
Thank
I mean,
you.
Is it is the whole point really not to jump in the river from anywhere or from places where you can get hurt or that kind of thing?
Well, I think you're saying you can still swim if you don't jump. And if you approach the bank and walk in.
Yeah, or jump in from below. You know, I think the idea was that the police chief's concern was people jumping off the bridges and then high up, you can really then hurt yourself if you're bad.
Correct.
That was that dangerous.
Yeah,
okay. Hugh?
Mike, is that a substantial enough change to have another hearing, or it sounds to me like it's the same intent as what is in the paper? What we've received.
I think it's close enough that you could go through and modify it if you wish to today. Probably what I would recommend, if you did want to include the language that Dean provided, since we haven't received or heard about prior to tonight's meeting, would be to possibly get a copy of it from what's suggested, and then have the police department review it and bring it back in a subsequent meeting. I'd hate to pass on it on the fly like this,
yeah, right.
And I think that it covers where we can incorporate and review those suggestions and then either proceed with it or slightly modify them.
So we're only losing 2 weeks timeline because in 2 weeks we could have a second hearing.
That's correct.
Again.
That is correct. Yeah, I don't think you'd have to start the whole process over again.
Okay. And then the signage would just be little signs mean, has that been figured out?
Well, that's up to the city commission. I mean, we don't put up signs for all of our ordinances. We could put them at various locations. It all depends on how much signage you want to put up and what, again, let's go back to what the police department was looking at. We have people that were doing something that they would get a call on, that you know, somebody's doing something dangerous. They go up to those individuals and say, don't do that, or it's hazardous. And they say, well, is there a rule against it? And there wasn't a rule against it. So that's how most of those things are coming up. I really hate to see us overpopulated with no signs. That's not the type of community that we've been. So we'd have to find some type of a balance with regards to it.
Yeah.
Okay. I would be in agreement also. So I guess, do you want a motion on this? Or do you want?
You should make a motion to postpone. Maybe with the commission, if that consensus is to incorporate language similar to what Commissioner Solomon suggested in a revised version, come back at a future meeting.
So I would make a motion to postpone with language revised and a second reading 2 weeks from now.
That's second.
Okay. Any further discussion? Roll call, please.
Brunch?
Aye.
Needhammer?
Aye.
Page?
Aye.
Solomon?
Aye.
Conklin?
Aye.
Motion carried.
Dean, if you could email me that, like,
sure, we'll
speed up the process.
Moving on to new business, dust control application contract. Tim?
Thank you, Mayor. So each year the city goes up for bids, or each year the city provides dust control services to gravel roads throughout the community. There are about 3.5 miles of gravel roads that we treat, plus the parking lot, the gravel parking lot area up at Avalanche Preserve. So we put those bids out, as has been the case in the past. There's one company in northern Lower Michigan that provides those services, Northern Michigan Dust Control. They provided a bid of 63 cents per gallon. Based on the amount that would be required, that would cost the city $18,900. Went back and took a look at what we paid 10 years ago. It's about just over 3% increase per year on average is what we've seen compared to the price of 48 cents a gallon back in 2009. So they're the only supplier. We had a competitive bid despite that. And my recommendation would be that we move forward and get our dust control program moving. We're a little bit behind schedule. We typically do two applications, one in early July or late June, and then one in sometime in August. That's been a little bit of a weird spring, but we've had periods of a lot of rain and then periods of dry, dusty conditions. So we're due, and my recommendation would be that we move forward with this recommendation and get these guys under contract.
Thank you. Any other comments from staff or the public? Yes. Please state your name for the record.
City Ballin. Do they do out by the dog parks for dust control?
Tim, could you answer that, please?
Yeah. Ridge Road?
We do Ridge and Addis both, yes.
Okay, it's really bad. That's why I wondered, so. Okay.
Any other comments? We'll go to board deliberation. Dean?
Okay.
Tim, is there any preparation that has to go, like, do the roads get graded, or?
Yeah, there's a significant amount of coordination required up front. We grade roads, we'll add additional gravel where is required, and then bring the gravel that has been pushed out to the shoulders up into the center of the road, maintain a positive, try to create more of a positive slope again on the road. Then typically a day later, they come in and clear it.
The other question I had is, since they're the only bidder and there's a history, could it be a multi-year, or is that not legal to do that?
It is an option. I know that this bidder, during the bidding process, had expressed to me that they may not be in business next year. The individual has been doing this for many years, is looking to retire. I also spoke with the Charlevoix County director and Antrim County director of roads. Both of those guys have expressed just general concern about the industry this service in northern lower Michigan and what that might mean for prices in the future. So we are looking at an alternative to possibly do this ourselves in the future by converting some existing equipment, but we haven't really fully vetted that out yet, and we wouldn't be in a position to do that until next year.
Thank you.
Okay, Ron?
I had a question about Jefferson Street, you know, being part of it is Evangeline Township. Now, is that covered under Act 51? We're required to take it, or do we get any help from the township as far as the cost of it?
We receive all Act 51 money for Jefferson Street, even though that northern portion of it is the kind of the dividing line between us and Evangeline Township. So maintenance is our responsibility.
Okay. Another question is Taylor Street. We had a letter in regards to that from a citizen here about a month ago. And that does carry a lot of traffic with all the sporting events that are going on out there. Is there a way that we can give that extra treatment besides the two times that we're doing it? Or do you feel those two events is enough?
Yep. I wish I had the experience to answer that, you know, precisely, but, you know, we'll monitor it, and if the dust gets out of control, we can get some additional chloride put down. I'm pretty confident. There's a little bit of, a little bit of wiggle room in our numbers. There's a few streets that may not, or alleys that may not require a full second treatment, or second treatment at all, and my understanding from the history is that's kind of allowed us some flexibility in the past in doing additional, whether it's up an avalanche or on one of the regular gravel roads.
So coming from Charlotte, if we do anything additional, it would be an addition for the contract that's here.
Yeah, the price is a per gallon price, so they come with a 10,000 gallon tanker, so they will. They could be perhaps doing other work in the area, and they could kind of swing by and hit an area at the city for no additional cost beyond what's in the contracts.
We have had situations in the past where if we had a really dry and dusty season where we actually went and did like a third application on the whole community. And we made sure the commission was aware that at this point you'd be able to awarding a bid for this contractor, and we use them going forward. And if we had to make some adjustments, we communicate that with the commission and move forward.
So,
yeah.
Tim, I have a couple questions. Talking about one of our goals is protecting Lake Charlevoix. Has technology made this oil-based product any safer, environmentally speaking?
Yes, so this is basically, it's a salt, it's a liquid salt that is applied to the road. So there's no oils or any other foreign materials in it. Really the salt binds with the moisture that's in the gravel, and then that keeps the gravel tight, which keeps the dust down.
Okay, thank you. Because when we talked about our last month, we talked about fertilizer. Now we're talking about road applications. My other comment on this is we've talked about this for years, but we have, I think, 23 gravel roads in city limits with a cost of $3 million I know we don't have the money, we don't have it budgeted, but every time we could look at paving a road, we reduce the cost of, which is really not apples to apples, but still, our long-term goal would be to get some of those gravel roads paved. That's all I have.
I would make a motion that we approve a purchase order contract with Northern Michigan Dust Control for the 2019 Gravel Dust Control Program in an amount not to exceed $18,900 and authorize the city manager to execute the documents.
Second.
Any further discussion? Roll call, please.
Niedhammer?
Aye.
Page?
Aye.
Salomon?
Aye.
Conklin?
Aye.
Crunch?
Aye.
Motion carried.
Thank you. Moving on to Veterans Park Playground Leadership. Tim.
Thank you, Mayor. Back in May, the City Commission awarded a contract to Pentura Landscape. They're the company that builds playground structures, I should city build. They market playground structures and then erect those for communities all around the state. That was part of the Charlevoix County Parks grant that we received that money for. As part of the project, when they complete the what's called a cozy dome and saddle spinner over at Peninsula Beach, the contract included placing about 30 cubic yards, which is, if you can envision, three dump trucks full of wood chips around the playground structure. The chips that were specified there were engineered chips, which are chips that, as was explained in the memo, they're not just native wood chip material. This is material that's been highly screened for size and doesn't have any organics. It meets all the ADA requirements to push an individual with a wheelchair or in a walker across the chips, and doesn't have any harmful contaminants in it. That was included in the $10,000 package. When we were laying the playground out a couple weeks back, we had the representative from Ventura come over and take a look at our large playground structure here to determine how much additional wood chip we would need there. His estimate came back at 210 cubic yards. That's a substantial amount more. But we'd achieve an economy of scale if we bundled doing this project together with the Peninsula Beach project, and kind of save money at least on this project. So it would drop the unit price from $87 per cubic yard for those engineered wood chips down to $60 per cubic yard, which is a pretty decent price based on some comparables that I looked at. So we do need it, especially for safety reasons, in order to get the physical level of the chips up to the minimum that's required in the playground structure. So rather than going out for bids for a separate contractor, it made sense to kind of bundle it together with the other work that Ventura is doing. They would physically drive the truck in and then blow the chips into the place. So our staff involvement would be pretty minimal. So my recommendation would be that we proceed and have Ventura kind of top off the wood chips in our main playground area to get it up to the minimum acceptable standards, and that we utilize the miscellaneous capital improvements in the parks and recreation budget for that purpose.
Thank you. Any comments from staff or the public? On to board deliberation. Sal?
I'm good with it.
Okay. You?
So, Tim, I don't, or Mike, this might be the treatment that we did on the play structure a few years ago. Is that going to be something we do on a regular basis? Or
yes, we do. We do that on a regular basis with regards to the treatment of the wood to make sure that arsenic that might be in it isn't encapsulated, and we also test it on a regular basis. Everything's come back good so far.
So if we treat it, is it okay with the wood chips that are going to go down there? Would they have to be removed for the treatment?
No. Okay. No. That we believe was a one-time thing because of the leaching from the structures themselves into the old wood chips that were there that we removed at one time before.
And then Tim, at Rotary, we've talked about this at the Parks and Rec, the play structure there where there's a lot of water that gathered. Is that a candidate for wood chips there?
Really knows probably better to try to resolve that drainage problem up there first, and then see if the ground dries up.
Okay. That's all I have.
Thank you. Rob?
I'm good with it.
Okay. Dean?
Yeah. When I first read the background, I scanned it quickly. I read a Peninsula Beach playground, cozy dome, and salad spinner. And I couldn't picture it in my mind what it was going to be. It's actually a saddle spinner, so I'm much better with that. But Mike, I have two little questions. One is about Peninsula Beach location for the improvements there in the chips. Whether the high water table is causing you to have to rethink the location of those.
It's not. If you can envision where the existing playground is, our proposal is to stake an area just immediately kind of southeast of the playground up in the grassed area, where we would prep that area to move the the topsoil and grass, and then dig down, I think it's 18 inches, to prepare for the placement of the structures and then wood chips, engineer chips all around there.
Great. So. And I was also curious about how often there's a need to top off, as you said, chips here and over at the conservation.
Yeah, really each spring, the staff should be conducting a playground inspection and assessing the level of the mulch. There have been marks put on the structures. You can see little red paint marks around inside the structures. And that's the amount that we should have. So we're going to start doing those starting in the spring. And that will be part of the routine process.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm all set with it. We entertain a motion.
I'll move to approve the purchase order contract with Ventura for the additional engineered wood chips at Veterans Park Playground structure in an amount not to exceed $9,870 and authorize the city manager to execute the documents.
Okay. Any further discussion? Roll call, please.
Page.
Aye.
Salonen.
Aye.
Conklin.
Aye.
Grunch.
Aye.
Needhammer.
Aye.
Motion carried.
Thank you. Moving on to item C, we have a couple pirates in the house. Pirate Fest, special event. You want to make a presentation?
Sure. My name's Roger Coates, and I'm here representing the Pirate Fest. I've been in coordination and talks with Shauna Champion from the Michigan Highland Group. They were initially wanting to book that weekend, which is, for us in Boyne City, August 10th. With another festival, they backed out of that festival because of what they heard about our Pirate Festival. They wanted to be a part of Boyne City and come north and enjoy what we have to offer here, and then plus the Row Under event. So we're looking to use the open space over here on the north end of Boyne City, and it's been announced to us that first time use, we have to come here and get approval from the commission.
Thank you. Actually, I did this backwards. Tim, you got to make a presentation.
Really, nothing a lot beyond this. It's a new event request, and our normal past practice has been that it would come before the Parks and Recreation Commission, and then with a favorable recommendation to the City Commission, just out of the interest of the timing of when they got their act in. It was after the last Parks and Recreation Commission was held, so. We don't have another Parks and Rec Commission meeting until the day before, I think, or a bed or a couple of days before. So we thought it would be appropriate to take it to the City Commission. So it has your blessing as a new event. And then secondly, you know, is this how the City Commission, I guess, wishes to use the open space? And does the City Commission have any concerns with respect to that? So.
Okay. Thank you.
This will be the second year for the Pirate Fest. Last year was the first year. I think it exceeded most people's expectations in the community. It brought lots of people to town, and it was fairly well organized. We had no real problems with regards to it. This is consistent with potential uses for the open space for short-term events that will be coming in and out of there. So we talked to them about different locations for the variety of activities that they had. And this one seemed to have the space that they needed and the visibility with regards to it, too. Staff is supportive of the request. We don't see any problems with regards to it. But again, as Tim mentioned, our past practice is for new items the first time around, we bring it to the City Commission. And even though this Pirate Fest has been here 1 year before, this is a new activity as part of the Pirate Fest, so we thought out with overabundance of caution to make sure that we brought it to you and make sure we had everybody on the same page.
Thank you.
Mr. Mayor?
Yes.
Roger, could you just kind of describe what it's going to look like that weekend?
Yeah, Shauna gave me a map which laid out the entire field. She used a Google Earth image so that structure that is now gone was still in her image, but she kind of worked around that and she's laid out where the caber toss is going to be. These are big, thick, 300-ton guys that can lift logs and chunk them down. It's all part of a competition that they do. And I don't know all the events. I know there's a hammer throw, but she says there is ample space for all that. She's got it all mapped out, which I think Cindy did forward that to the commission.
I'm really bad.
So would there be orange fencing around the park to keep people away from hammers being thrown and stuff like that?
I am not sure.
Generally what they have, it's kind of like, I've attended quite a few of them, and there is no delineation between the spectators or whatever, but they use it, it's like a football field. And it's not like they're going to be throwing an axe, you know, it's very controlled. So,
from the image, everything is directed towards the lake, you know, away from the road, towards the lake. All the throws would be facing that west side. She did ask, the only question that leads me to think there's boundaries or perimeters is if we had places for spectators to sit, which we decided would be best would be all along the, I think it's a sidewalk where it paved, connects the north parking lot to the parking lot next to Honeywell. But there's a nice blacktop piece that we could use that as the perimeter that people could line up with their tent chairs and view. She asked if there was bleachers. I said, no bleachers, but that seems to be what they're used to, participating in a field where there's bleachers where spectators can sit. She said lawn chairs and blankets would be fine. So that would prevent, that's a boundary between the road and the field events with spectators in between.
He will move right to you. You got anything else?
Nope.
Okay.
We will be providing another porta potty in the area also. And we'll be putting up a small tent because they will be changing clothes. And so we will provide that. Plus we have the two restrooms and we want to be able to staff that also during the event.
Yep, that was another one. Okay.
I think that's it as well. What next?
Well, lumberjack is what I'm going for with the actual axe throwing, but we'll look until next year.
Dean?
Yeah, I was wondering if participants in this event would be protected from misdeeds by pirates who are in town that weekend.
We can't guarantee anything.
Okay, I figured that would be the answer. On a more serious note, I'm wondering if this is consistent, is indeed consistent with our conservation team.
Yes.
And I know one of the concerns in that easement was parking, that's restricted to a certain area eventually. Will there be additional parking permitted in the paved areas over what we normally permit?
Not that I'm aware of. Again, there are certain timelines with regards to when we acquired that property, with regards to removal of some of those. We're still well aware of those time periods.
Very good.
Thank you. Sally?
Yeah, it sounds almost like the Scottish Highland being
it is.
I attended in New Mexico, and it's really a fun event. Yeah,
it is fun.
So this is a traveling company, or that this is a company that...
It is. They do, it sounds like this group does about 5 events per summer, and it's a part of, kind of like if you were running a marathon, if you were to run the Boston Marathon, you would have to do several marathons to earn points to be invited to the Boston Marathon. This is similar. This is a points-based games so that these athletes can be invited to the big Highland Games, which is somewhere else. She's really looking forward to this year going well and using this as a way to draw in her crowds because she's making money off the registrants. So as every athlete applies to register for her event, that's how she's making her money. But this being Boyne City's hub of bringing everyone to a place where they can camp afterwards and enjoy our downtown, that's what she's pitching on her end.
And there are actually competitions also. I mean, the ones that I've attended, there were no bleachers. They were in an open field. And so I don't think there's any safety concerns unless somebody decides to run in front of a cave or as it's thrown. We would hope that wouldn't happen.
That would be my grandson's.
It could be me.
They had a caber toss for women, too. I came in second.
So will Veterans Park be used for camping? You're taking over Veterans Park?
Then they come up with the fire chief. I think there's a permissible camping back here behind the baseball field, if I'm correct. And so several have shown interest if they could. No camping on the open space site, but afterwards a few have expressed interest to camp behind the baseball diamond. I think that's also granted to the people that come in for the flea market, too.
We'll have to review that. Generally, it's not allowed. we do have certain areas that are allowed for camping, that's not one.
Okay.
And we've also explored that they could camp at the school if need be.
Sure.
That's cool.
Well, I'm in full support. My grandkids were all in last year, out of control, but they had fun.
Well, the mayor was there. You were on guard.
Yeah.
I was a little
probation.
I got recruited, so yeah. Looking for a motion.
I would move to approve the request of the Boyne City Pirate Fest to hold a Highlander Games special event on August 10th of this year, subject to details acceptable to the city staff.
Section. Any further discussion? Roll call, please.
Salomon?
Aye.
Conklin?
Aye.
Crunch?
Aye.
Needhammer?
Aye.
Page?
Aye.
Motion carried.
Aye! And it's artist.
Thank you. We'll get on to item D, third-party payment processing.
That would be me. Our accounting provider, financial software provider, BSNA, has informed us that they're no longer going to be working with official payments. And official payments was a third-party provider that if you came into City Hall and paid your taxes or utility bill, it kind of funneled through official payments. The fee, the convenience fee, was accepted by official payments, and we got the actual money for it. The same thing if you paid a payment online for utility or taxes. The same company was used. So BSNA has offered us the option of two different companies that would do the same type of, would be the same type of partner for us. After doing our research and speaking with people at BSNA, Shelley and I would like to recommend that we contract with Point and Pay to do this process for us. We are going to be adding permitting and other kinds of fees as well that you could pay at City Hall. Again, the convenience fee is paid by the end user. Point and Pay seemed like the best option for us. Invoice Cloud had some great opportunities out there and other things that they would do, like they would give utility bill recipients additional notices. You'd get your notice and get your bill emailed to you. You'd get a notice 10 days later. You'd get a notice the day before it was due, that kind of thing. We didn't think that that was worth the extra $100 a month for those procedures or processes. Point and Pay could do the same thing, but you didn't have to pay that $100 a month. So if there's a need for it down the road, we could still do that. So our recommendation is that we contract with Point and Pay to be our payment partner.
How long is that good for, Cindy? Like, is there a contract length? Or
as long as we want to keep it going. Their rates right now, the credit card and debit card fees are 3% as they were, I think, in 2015 when we first started this. So that hasn't changed other than they simplified their processing. So whether it's utility or taxes, it's 3%.
So if you pay by cash or check?
Nothing changes. Yeah, right. There's no convenience fee.
3%, okay.
Correct. But if you come in and, or if you call and pay, make a payment over the phone, it's the 3%.
Thank you, Cindy. Any questions? Okay, we'll go to staff. Let's turn it here around.
I support the recommendation.
Yeah, I think this is fine. I'm just kind of curious, how well used is the e-payment option now among residents?
How many? Get a handful a month.
Handful?
Yeah.
Most still pay by check or cash.
Yeah.
Good. I'm good.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm good.
I'm good. Looking for a motion?
I'll make a motion to approve the agreement with Point and Pay for my credit card, debit card, e-check, or other electronic means for tax bills, utility bills, and other miscellaneous payments to the City of Boyne City, and authorize the city manager to execute the documents.
I'll second.
Any further discussion?
Yes, Mike.
Just a reminder that in addition to checks and or cash, we can also set up direct deposits or withdrawals from people's bank accounts. Like I have my utility bill bill set up on that, and there's no additional charge for that either. So there's multiple ways for people to avoid the fees. This is a convenience option for them, and there are costs associated with it, and we'll pass those along to them.
Thank you.
We're ready for a vote.
We're ready for a vote. Roll call, please.
Conklin?
Aye.
Grunch?
Aye.
Needhammer?
Aye.
Page?
Aye.
Salomon?
Aye.
Motion carried. Thank you.
Moving on to item E, loss on Lake Street, PA 210 application presentation.
Right. Well, as the commission is well aware, the loss on Lake Street project is moving its way through its various approvals that it needs. It had received planning commission approval with regard to the site plan that was presented for the site at the intersection of State and Lake Streets involving those three properties over there. And there's a map included in the agenda. I can put it up on the screen showing those properties as well. So now that they have the approvals to actually build it, they're working on putting the financing together to do that. They've come to us and requested a Public Act 210, which is something that's new to this community. It's a form of basically freezing the taxes at the current levels for those properties and for a period of up to 10 years. Since it was new, we had a public information session with regards to this process. We have a little less than 20 people that showed up to attend that. And it's continued to work its way through the process. We've gone through the steps with regards to Public Act 210, where we've gone through the public hearings and required steps to establish the district, which incorporates those three properties again. That has been submitted to Charlotte County. Several of us attended the meeting of the county board at that time with regards to their questions, comments, concerns. With regards to it, basically it boiled down to is they want to make sure that what Michigan Community Capital was promoting with regards to the moderate rents and things of that nature and long-term leases would be something that would go forward during the whole term, 10-year term or whatever we set it up as. And if for some reason they didn't follow through on that, that there would be some type of reverter clause. So based on those comments, I really didn't see anything from Charlevoix County with regards to opposing it. They took no action at the meeting that we were at, and I've had no further communications with them since. So basically, that just has to go until the clock winds down on that. They don't have to take any affirmative action to approve the district. The only thing they really need to do if they wanted to would be to make a motion to oppose it. So as the district works its way through its final approval steps, Michigan Community Capital has started to move on to the next step, which is getting us an application, a specific application, with regards to providing the tax relief in the district as it's established. There are no there's a kind of like a parallel process after the district is established. It's somewhat different. It isn't quite as formal as the district establishing process. But we want to make sure that the city commission got the application, had a chance to look it over, and if you had any questions that you want, either staff or our consultant, and Matt McCullen from Mount Lowell is here today, to review or bring to you. We had time to do that before July 9th meeting, when this is scheduled to come back for formal consideration. So that's a quick summary of it. I'll put the screen up with that shows the lots that are on there. It's basically the old Valley building, the old First Merit Bank building, and the old bike fix shop. So I did get communication from our assessing team saying that they have all the information. You'll notice on the application that was submitted that the applicant and Michigan Community Capital fills out their section. Then there's a part for the assessor to fill out. They've indicated that they have all the information that they need to provide that information well in advance of our July 9th meeting. So, is there any questions for myself, or I don't know if there's additional information that Matt might have for this city commission? But again, we're not looking for any action today. This is an introductory item, and if the commission has anything that they want us to follow up on, we'd like to get that input tonight.
Matt?
Yeah, I just wanted to also quickly say from the conversations that we've had with y'all and the county board, it appeared that there were three considerations that had come up there to an negotiate, and the board has a right to request a development agreement that outlines the provisions of the act to make sure that everybody's on the same page for that. The one was that the premise of the abatement is you're providing attainable housing, and that the commitment that they've made for 51%, at least 51% of the houses to be at 80% of average median income rents was something that was important, and wanted to be able to continue that through the period of exemption, and so that they would commit to that and also provide the documentation over time and reporting that they're continuing to provide that within the development agreement. Another item that was raised was subletting in short-term rentals. I think that maybe we can talk about this, is that if we just limit those short-term rentals, that could be either directly or indirectly by anybody subletting, so that they couldn't rent for less than 30 days unless it was approved by the city. And I think we came into that situation where they may not be full, and they've got a summer coming up, and cash flows are bad, and that would be a short-term kind of arrangement for apartments that had not been able to be rented. Don't foresee that, but that may be an option that the developers could come back to the city and request that relief for a short period of time. And then the other is any transfer of the property that the transferee is allowed for, but the transferee would have to continue to meet that obligation for attainable housing there. So those are kind of the three main conditions we include: indemnification and insurance requirements and other kinds of things that are standard procedures. Also, the reporting requirements are requirements in the act that the city has to provide reports to the state, so we'd ask them to provide their information both on retaining the attainable housing and as well any other reporting or financial reporting that's necessary. So I did send a note to Mike yesterday. There's one other thing that we need from them. It's not quite clear in the act. In section 4 it has all the requirements of the application, but in section 8 it says that the commission cannot approve an application until, and there's 4 or 5 different items that are all met there, that it's a qualified facility, that the district's been established, that they're not in arrears. But one is that they have to commit in writing that the project would not proceed without the abatement. And so it's not part of the application, but it's something that we need to follow up. We can either do that in a written communication separately or incorporate it within the development agreement. We meet that obligation there. So if they do not meet those developments, the commission does have to come back and take action to revoke the exemption certificate. So it's not just a clear violation that's done. We have to come back that there would be, that they didn't continue that. We have to come back and ask for a specific resolution to revoke the exemption. So that's kind of where we stand in terms and conditions, and we'll have to share that with the commission and see if there's anything that was provided as well. So,
what's the timeline? We're just getting ready for July 19th.
9th.
July
9th.
9th.
Yep.
And then like I said, it's out of our hands.
And then the resolution will be approved, and I have drafted that resolution, and would include contingent upon an execution of the development agreement there. That package would be sent to the state tax commission, and then they're the ones who actually issue the certificate. And that has to be in their hands by October 31st for the next year's reply. So we have plenty of time.
Anything else, Mike?
No.
Any comments from the public or staff? Let's go to discussion. So you don't need a motion from us. Here to answer any questions.
Is there anything else we need to discuss or continue? Any other information needs that you might request?
Yeah. Sorry.
I have several questions. Thinking about that development agreement, one of the provisions is that if they don't meet the original objective, then they lose the certificate, the exemption certificate. Does that mean that they would be liable for the already received, or just that one?
That would be your choice. Some communities have said that if you don't make it in year 9, you got to pay everything back. But that would be your choice. You could make it to that level. You could just say that the exemption is done. You know, one way to look at it is you've sort of met that need up to that point in time. You're no longer meeting that need, so you no longer get that exemption. But there are communities that do clawback provisions.
So that would be a decision we need to make.
Yes.
Or a discussion.
Yes.
Second question I had is, I'm wondering if the state, you know, that MEDC grant that they're hoping to receive, puts similar development or any sort of development restrictions or conditions upon that grant.
I don't know that specifically. I think we can certainly check into that.
Because if we were, you know, going to overlap or be consistent, maybe reinforce somehow that those two are put together. My next question is, you know, we received that pro forma. And I wonder what our role is with that. I mean, a lot of numbers in that don't make sense of it. Is that something that is important for us to review as a commission and staff help and verify the accuracy or legitimacy of those? Or is that sort of informational to us that's really the tax or no tax in Lansing that does that intensive review to verify?
Yeah, there's two levels to that, and that was another note that I included to Mike. We have had a conversation regarding the pro forma with Michigan Community Capital, and they said they would provide a more simplified version. That is the version that the state requires for its programs. And so they have a fairly rigorous review of that pro forma, looking at all those assumptions and determining, and that's what they base their large grant decision on. And so I think what Marilyn had talked about was providing a more simplified pro forma. There, and we need to follow up with them and get that. I did review the pro forma, and I'm familiar with the format that it is, and did sort of say that the cash that they have, the cash over debt and obligations, is just about equivalent to the anticipated abatement in that case. And so without it, they wouldn't be able to meet their debt obligations. And so it is, you know, an important element to that, in my opinion, is a necessary element for the project.
And you'd be able to advise us whether the reasonable or
the numbers. Yeah, you know, in that case, Marilyn said they were updating the information as well, so I'd look at that. But I did review that pro forma and found the assumptions to be reasonable. The, you know, rents were identified, all of the other things. There weren't any surprises in there. Certainly there may be marginal differences, but there wasn't anything that stood out in terms of their assumptions and their cash flow.
My last is more common, but I think we've been doing a very good job, excellent job up to this point of making sure that information about this project and all its different, you know, forms and approvals and the complexity of our exemption process, your tax exemption process, as we've gotten that out. We had the public information session, even though there was a crowd of people here. I think the people who did attend that presentation really appreciative of that. I'm wondering whether really another public session would be necessary or not, but if we could use our methods of communication to still communicate out, this is the next step. Here's what the documents are, here's where you can find them. And then, you know, by all means, call, you know, staff members. If you're curious about that, if you want to learn more about that, if you're unclear about something, if something bothers you, and just as continuing our effort to make sure that our residents, you know, understand what we're doing, have the opportunity to ask us questions and participate. I think it's well within our capacity to do that. We've done well in the past. That's it.
Okay. I was thinking, would that have to happen before the 9th?
Well, you know, something as simple as I was thinking before coming over here, we have all these documents. They will be on the website, as we always are, for this preparation. You know, even just a Facebook post or our e-newsletter that we can send out saying, hey, here's the next step, just to let you know. Here, in simple language, is the next step in this process. Here's where the information is that you can look at. If you have questions, please call us. And here's when we're getting, here's the public hearing, here's what's going to happen in the public hearing, here's how you can attend. So we're continuing to let our residents know about it.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Sally?
Are we all the way down the road when we get to the 9th? Is that going to be the planning hearing?
Yes, at that time you can approve the process, assuming that we have all the other background materials in place. Now, for some reason, the commission either heard something or whatever, I mean, you can table it at that time and then postpone it to another meeting.
That proposed resolution is the last action to make the...
I just had one minor thing on this application. They have the wrong zip code for Point City. They have a mistake somewhere.
Probably Cadillac, they're working with Cadillac.
I think it's even further south than that. But yeah.
Thank you, Sally. You?
So, Mac, how will this public hearing, what will it be like? Or how, you're going to present something, the Michigan Community Capital is going to present something, we're going to see a render, are we like starting at the beginning?
It can be anything you want.
Well, what should it be?
I think it's probably reasonable to provide a brief overview of the project by Michigan Community Capital. I believe that they're attending, Mike, is that?
Yes.
So I think a brief overview of the project. I can do a brief overview of the process and kind of what it means and the evaluation for that and anything else that you might like to do. I think it's very appropriate to talk about the project and then to talk about what the exemption does and what the process has been to go through for that exemption.
So will our approval come before the state's approval?
Yes. Copies of the certified resolution and all the application materials all need to go in.
I think that question can be interpreted two different ways. And what I think I hear you saying is our financial assistance provided in advance of what the MEDC is doing.
Right.
Not necessarily just a procedural thing where we have to approve it first and then send it to the state for them. So, as I mentioned in my memo to the commission, I've reached out to the MEDC to see exactly where they are with our process to see how our timings are aligning. Michigan Community Capital has basically said that they need support from both entities for the project to financially be viable, and even then it still has a low rate of return. I contacted our MEDC contact just shortly before our meeting today to see if I had to get any further update because he hadn't responded to my earlier communication, and I haven't heard anything back. So as I said in the memo, once I hear something, I'll pass that along to the commission, so I keep reaching out to them. Because I want to make sure that our processes are consistent with each other.
So that summary of the pro forma, Mac, when might that be available? Before the public hearing? So
yes, I expect, we'll communicate. Mike and I were just going to chat a little bit about that, make sure that we're on the same page and what my interpretation is, to see if there was anything else that was necessary. And then we're going to communicate with each other. So, and I would expect it would be able to come in shorter.
Could they
share with the commission?
Could they provide a lease with the language, so we're comfortable that short-term rentals aren't a part of it? I mean, is that an appropriate
thing? Yeah, I'm not sure that it's available yet, but they can certainly provide a sample lease, or we can include that in the development agreement as a subsequent documentation reporting that they have to provide.
Are you working with Cadillac, too, on their project? With
yes, NCC? Yeah.
Are they kind of at the same stage, or are they?
A little bit ahead. Yeah, over the head. They're actually putting foundations in the ground.
So there's three communities that we're dealing with right now, which is Cadillac, Point City, and Grayland as well, too. I'm not sure if you're working with Grayland as well.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, I think Grayland was the one I mentioned because I was reading about that plan up and running. And
yes, something. And that one's a little farther, not behind, I wouldn't say, but it's third in the tier.
Thank you, Mac. We'll get back to you. I will open up. Yes, Larry?
Larry should fall on more High Street. Just had a question that in the public hearing, it may be beneficial to make sure that there's some teeth in the agreement that will remain low, affordable housing. I think there's you're going to have people complaining about taxes constantly, level of taxes. And the fact that this development has got a lake view, some people are going to be prejudiced that it's not going to flip at one time to some kind of high price condo type development. And that, yes, it is to get the tax abatements is going to be worthwhile for the long term. I think it's very much inherent that people will see that it is needed, affordable housing is needed, and that this development is satisfying very nicely in exchange for the tax abatement. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. I think Larry makes a good point. I came up with the county commissioners, I think it'd come up in a public hearing. That's all well and good, the development agreement, but you know what's going to happen, you know, 10 years and one day after the agreement expires is that they're going to sell, it's going to become luxury condos, and 10 years isn't very long, and what do we do after 10 years? How can we guarantee forever that it's it has that attainability? And I think the question will come up, and I think from a commission's perspective, we know, I mean, you can't control development forever, and it's in the city's interest to protect that intent of as long as we're providing a tax benefit. But beyond that, the question will come up. We want to be prepared to at least have a response about that issue. We don't have to answer that, of course, today, but I agree with Larry. I think it would probably come up in some time.
Okay, well, I will say there are communities, and this has been discussed with Michigan Community Capital, that extend the requirements of the process and project beyond the number of years. So depending on the length, they say continue whatever you had before for a period of time with a clawback provision. So that's, you know, an option for you to include. Again, that hasn't been discussed and kind of how that works through and whatever, but that may be at least in some period of time to extend the requirements for attainable housing with you know, some clawback if it doesn't happen. So you can extend it for 4 years, and if that doesn't happen in 2 years, you got to pay back 2 years of the abatement or something like that. So,
okay.
I'm curious to know if you still at that hearing are going to be pushing or having to sell the aesthetics of the place. From what it, I mean, when you think about what it was, the first rendering, it was such an improvement between that and the latest one. I don't see it. Picture of the old one anywhere to look for it, but do you anticipate that part is done now? It's over. You're not going to have people screaming and saying.
We can never say what people may or may not say.
Well,
with regards to the planning commission process and the steps with regards to site plan approval, that process is over.
Yeah.
That's been approved by the planning commission. People may have to bring up comments, and we should, you know, definitely entertain them if they do come up and kind of talk through how the process evolved and kind of the comments you used and said with regards to how it started and where it's at. So in some respects, we're beyond it, but if somebody has a question, then we're not beyond it.
Okay. I apologize, Ron. I haven't given you your chance yet.
So, the only question I have for Mac is does Michigan Capital have any completed projects? And these completed projects, do they have on-site management?
Yes, they do. They have a completed project in Traverse City where they converted a Days Inn into short-term property, and they do have an on-site manager there. I believe that they have another project downstate, but I can't quite name it. They're a fairly new organization. I think they only started 3 years ago or 4 years ago. And prior to that, they were primarily a financing assistance group. They would look at other developers. They'd come in with the projects and then help do the gap financing and work through all the process and secure the MEDC pieces. So they're a facilitator. I think that Cadillac might have been their first project as a developer to start that. But that is a plan to have on-site management for all of their projects. But that's something we can kind of follow up on and ask them for kind of that approach and information for implementation.
So, Mac, to add the extra years to the agreement, how do you need a consensus from us now that that's what we would appreciate, then you're going to negotiate with them prior to the
I mean, it's a big deal. I wanted to let the board know that that's an option. You know, we haven't discussed that at all with Michigan Community Capital and kind of said, here's a 10-year and that's a 10-year commitment and that's what we expect these things to fulfill your commitment. So, you know, that, that is done in other communities. It's not always that typical. I mean, one community, I think it was Auburn Hills that I was looking at, so, you know, if you don't hit the whole thing, you gotta pay back the whole. So if in year eight you don't meet the obligations and requirements, you gotta pay back the whole abatement. You know, it can be waived by the commission, but you know, pretty draconian kinds of claims or clauses in the agreement. But you know, that is a major concern, you know, and I think these folks have committed to, you know, providing this sort of resource that, you know, we should talk about that.
And just to clarify, you know, when we act or when this comes up for a public hearing, we're not approving the development agreement. That's a contingency, so we're negotiating a development agreement upon and after the 9th. Is that correct?
Yeah, and you know, I'll try and have something there, and we'll kind of work through that. You know, draft it based on this. We'll draft something out. We'll get out to them. And so, you know, hopefully we at least have the understanding and agreements of the major terms and conditions. You know, if we work really fast, we might be able to get the final document into the July 9th packet, but that would be aggressive.
Well, I'll weigh in. I'm in full support. Appreciate all the staff and Mac, your input, and appreciate how the community has stepped up with Kim and Chamber and Michelle and Main Street. Really going to be a big day for Boynton City on July 9th when we take another step forward. So kudos for getting us there. Appreciate it. At this point, we want to discuss what we just talked about, the contract expanding the years. Is that kind of what we're...
I think that's a discussion, if you're looking to go down that path, would be appropriate as we have July 9th, have that discussion with the Commission and Community Council. I think for us to have a one-sided conversation where we don't know all the implications of that would not be realistic.
Or would it be possible to bring it up and there were some things that came up and kind of fill out
yes.
What the Community Council is on what would work, what is, you know, the asset constraints to appear from their,
yes.
Their perspective and what they might be willing to agree to.
I think these are all points that we should bring up to them so they're not blindsided by that, and that maybe is, you know, let them know that this is a subject that the commission may want to talk about at the meeting tonight.
Fair enough. Okay. Any further questions, discussion, comments? Okay. Thank you, Matt.
If you happen to think of anything along the way, feel free to let me know and I can follow up on that too.
Okay. Moving on. Go to the order. And who wants to start here? Sally? You?
At last week's Housing Solutions meeting, there was a lot of conversation about the potential of the community land bank. And it was a suggestion of Marilyn Cusno to have maybe a meeting to talk about that. And I just wonder if other people think that might be a good idea, the land bank and the brownfield, and just learning more about what was discussed at that meeting. And, you know, the potential properties we have here, and just start exploring that. It was a really interesting meeting with the land bank, with the director.
State
director. Yeah. I know you weren't here, but I agree with you that opened up some potential possibilities, and that we should be educated so that we could take advantage of it. Yes, absolutely. Whether how you want to do that, through a work session, through a presentation. I mean,
I guess I need more insight as to what you're looking for.
Marilyn, the role and capacity of the land bank, the county land bank, has been very limited. Mm-hmm. In her eyes, as well as everybody else's eyes, were opened as to the tools that might be available and how, you know, how that would all take shape. She suggested that possibly we have a meeting and just kind of talk about what we heard and maybe what next steps could be to see what might be possible.
is what I understood.
Yeah, you know, I when I came into that meeting, I thought, well, Lambre, well, that's how you handle distressed properties that kept coming back in text, through tax foreclosure. But I think Jim Tischler sort of opened our eyes. It is a mechanism or a way of being able to achieve potentially affordable, attainable housing goals. You talked about the relationship between brownfield redevelopment and land bank, that there can be almost a merging of those and some ways of being able to utilize those tools in more creative ways in communities. And so I thought that was sort of intriguing. You know, the degree to which it works, I'm not sure. And then Marilyn says there's a lot more we could be doing with land bank than we're currently doing. It's in place, and you know, it's and her office supports it. So, you know, kind of exploring, what does that exactly mean? How could we, what could we do in not only Boyd City, I'd say the surrounding communities too, looking at something a little broader. It's certainly worth spending a little time on seeing what might happen, I think. Is that sort of accurate?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly what I took out, including I asked the question to Jim, was could we take the property that we might put on market soon and put that in the land bank? Referring to North Point, two pieces of property, and he said, absolutely, and it's a totally legal and progressive way to close the gap. So whoever the buyer is becomes as another tool to close the gap on the noise. And that was a new concept.
So, yeah, I'm not sure I understood what
you have.
Jim speaks quickly, but certainly it was intriguing enough to.
Even a single house, a single home, not one that, well, I guess it first has to go through the delinquent process of 3 years of not paying taxes.
Or but, you could take the piece of property you have, deed it to the land bank, and then make all the things that that's available through the brownfield would be available.
Right. Yeah, it was a very underutilized process, and again, Point City could be the leader in. Even cooperate with Shelburne County, cooperate in a bigger region. Mac, you have a comment?
Yeah, I was just going to say, just a kind of quick explanation on brownfields is that property that's owner in control of the land bank authority automatically qualifies as brownfield property. It doesn't have to meet any of the other stipulations because it's in the definition of blighted. So if there's some problem in qualifying for all of the other contaminated, blighted, function, obsolete, or historic, it automatically qualifies as that. It also opens up two primary additional eligible activities. And you may recall, we had problems with the special foundations on Lake Street redevelopment, but Point City is not a core community, and so those site preparation and infrastructure activities were not available for that project. If it's property owner in control of the land bank authority, also has the availability of site preparation and infrastructure as eligible activities for brownfield reimbursement. So that really kind of opens up and makes any project anywhere a core community. Happened down in Fred Travers, where they actually took over a property, but it was out in the township, but was able to put a major development in because it had site preparation costs that could be covered, which were pretty substantial, and infrastructure road improvement costs. So if those are two inhibitors to a project for financing, then that's the way to cover those costs. So it's kind of a primary brownfield incentive.
Yeah. I didn't mention any of that. Jim did a nice job, in presenting AP Apollo Pass and an interesting good job.
And he was more than willing to help us specifically to take it to the next step.
So. You're talking about Mr. Tischler.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Marilyn was also good too. She was very talking about the programs as we more we can do with this. But.
So do you somewhat see bringing the same people back together and kind of having an expanded discussion with regards to it, or different people?
Well, it was an introductory presentation, yeah. So how do we hear, Marilyn's help, what can we apply that when we look at specific situations, or possible things that we might anticipate for the future and say, well, how can we get it in place so that when the situation arises that we want to utilize those two tools together? How would we do that?
What I think I'm hearing you were significantly intrigued with this process, so we went into a deeper dive. Okay. And to contact Marilyn and other people to come back and let's have a much deeper discussion with regards to the workshop office.
He was suggesting the next step, maybe representation from East Jordan, Boynton City, Charlevoix, maybe Boynton Falls in the county, and have that next step.
Yeah, I would do it with Mark Benzin was here, and then some people.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, so I think there was interest beyond who came to our Boynton Housing Group because they were interested in this topic.
Yeah, and the common factor was the Charlevoix.
County.
Yeah, Charlevoix County. Yes.
I can pursue that.
Cool, thanks. Yes, keep going. I'm good with the order. But you? Yeah.
Yeah, I think that was all.
What's up? Ron?
Now, getting back to this discussion we had with regards to the land bank, that was the intriguing part to me, was the fact that anything that's in the deeded to the land bank is eligible for brownfield treatment. You know, that opens up a lot of doors. So I'm all for it. Let's move forward and see what we can do with it. So we certainly got a lot of different properties that have been sitting idle for many years.
Dean?
I had two items. First is last week we had participated in the marijuana webinar. Second one was series, which focused on how to get residents involved in discussions about recreational or, I suppose, medical marijuana. And effectively, one of the messages there was, be creative, use the tools of, look at what other communities have done, to give us some examples of those. And don't let this linger, because the point that they were making was that when the state rules are finalized, there would be a substantial interest in some communities of force issue. And so if we have our act together ahead of time, certainly in terms of process for engaging our residents, that would be to our advantage. Along that note, after the end of the webinar, we just had an informal discussion, thought it might be a good idea for us to have a work session of the commissioners and to design a public participation process to take place later this year. So I think we'd like to get that scheduled as a work session.
Possibly similar to how we created our goals. That'd be one avenue, an example of
how. An example, right. Of how I think the one point they did make very clearly is that using a sort of public hearing format is that people in, people get up and testify for 3 minutes or 5 minutes is not the most effective way to do it. That we really want to get our residents working into some discussion. Some other communities have used a survey in advance, both tools, and that worked out well for them. I think in the southeast part of the state, those examples are online that we can get in advance and decide what we might want to do. So anyhow, that was the first thing, to schedule a work session. Might be that would work out for you to propose some days perhaps. Second thing was we've visited in the past about putting together a committee of two to work with Mike on the annual city manager performance appraisal forms and format, and wanted to perhaps ask you to appoint that group, and we could work with Mike to get that done before this fall's evaluation process.
That's the evaluation process, and you can be part of that, obviously. Is it my role to appoint now, or is it this becomes an action item for
future? Either way, you want to do it. I don't know if you're prepared to take action on that today, or what. I know it's come up a couple times.
My thoughts would be the same two, Dean and Hugh, would be the committee since they followed through, since they started the process. But if you want, I don't care procedurally if you want to make that item for future agenda, or if I just point them now and then take it with you, and you have the time.
If you made your determination, I would say proceed.
Then I will officially you to continue the process of negotiation forming. I think it's the correct word, right? We're trying to create both parties.
Yeah, we want to work on that form a little bit, format, or scale. Are we guys in touch about that? And then just the process, just refining that, and not like, all over, but I think that was our point.
So I want those two to that committee. Anything else?
Another question.
Yes.
I see there was another webinar on the marijuana that's the 27th.
Of July.
July.
Yeah. July. Oh, that's of July.
July.
Okay. Yeah, it was every month for Oklahoma State University.
I have one thing under the order, and I'm going to refer to Scott. I think the whole maintenance ordinance, we've talked about that.
Are you going to answer
it? Yeah, that kind of begins with you, doesn't it? The Program and Plan Commission.
Well, we brought sample ordinances to the City Commission. Basically, it would be a bad document with perhaps some refinements of articles to be included or excluded from it, because it does cover a wide range of things and some, you know, things outside the skill set that we have here to administer. So, you know, like mechanical, electrical, all those kinds of items. So we need to identify exactly what would be in the ordinance and then start that adoption process.
The reason I'm asking, so I had a resident say that the neighbor's home is, there's rodents going in and out, and there's, and I said, I think we need that maintenance ordinance as a tool, but I told them to contact you, so.
Yeah, we do have some ability now, but again, that would open up more tools that we would have.
Just so that becomes on our agenda, somewhere somehow. Anything else we do to work?
So that means that we need to ask Mike to put it on the agenda to keep it going?
Well, I think at a staff level, we need to look at it in regards to exactly what our capabilities are,
uh-huh,
and what make a recommendation to the City Commission of what that document should entail.
We have a motion on the floor, so we have a second.
Second.